year ago, I was riding on a bus, and a stranger struck up a conversation with me. He turned out to be a music lover, and we talked about people that we had both known, and I mentioned when the context arose that I'd played for this and that famous singer, and he looked at me, and then finally said, "You're quite an old timer, aren't you?" Well, so I am, and in more ways than one, because my approach to my work is definitely 19th century. It is applicable to a very large degree to contemporary music, but since most of my work is concentrated on the great compositions of the 19th century, this has formed my approach, my attitude, and my way of work. I think you ought to know a little bit about that before I start demonstrating. It is mainly based on a firm conviction that word and music are equally important, that music is not there to take over, sort of sublimating the message of the word and express it in its own terms as a substitute for the word. We must bear in mind that the poetry has been in existence, or for that matter, the dramatic scene, long before music was set to it, and usually as an independent work of art. To do justice to the song or the aria, the singer must therefore learn to know the poem, recite it in different moods, in different ways, until he can tell himself, "This is all there is in the poem. There is no more that I can find." After that, he should go to the score, still not sing, but then recite the poem in the rhythm in which it was composed, and following more or less the ups and downs of the melodic line, still reciting more with all the expressive power that he finds in him, so that he now is synchronizing his recitation with the particular way in which the composer has set the words. Then he is ready to sing. This has many advantages. He will have no trouble finding the right vocal collar to express this or that phrase, this or that accent or key word. And when it comes to passages that might be difficult, if he tackled them from a merely technical point of view, knowing what he wants to express will give him the second wind to go past or around or through that particular hurdle with the power of conviction, rather than being only afraid, will I last to the end of this breath, or will I make this high note? Word and music are symbolic carriers of a meaning that is behind poetry and the composition. I think it is important to realize that while we derive certain aesthetic pleasure from the sound of music and text, there is a meaning which was at the back of the composer's and the poet's mind, which he then crystallized in his text and in his music. And we ought to find what that meaning, what that attitude, that complex of feelings was, in order to reproduce the attitude, the atmosphere from which this was written. That means that the singer must know, when he does work in translations, what the deviation from the original Yes? In order to correct certain mistakes in the translation. And if, as is mostly the case, he sings in the original language, he must know perfectly to the very literal meaning of each word what the meaning of that poetry is. Otherwise, he doesn't have the authority to give a really fine and expressive reading. I should stress that there is no conflict between the beauty of vocal tone and the characterization which we have to give each phrase. Some singers seem to act on the idea that, oh well, I don't have so much of vocal equipment, my voice is nothing to be particularly proud of, but I'm going to interpret. And so they go and more or less speak on pitch or do something else which is at any rate less than they could do. It is sometimes done out of modesty and sometimes simply erroneously because they think that with their, let us say, less than outstanding or sometimes quite below average vocal equipment, it isn't worth their while or the public's attention to sing as well as they can. This is shortchanging themselves, the audience, and the work. The less you have, the more you have to try to milk it to the last ounce of material and beauty there is.